This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
OK, Lee in Liverpool. Dear Rosemary and Thyme, a rare night. In fact, we've got extraordinary... I've got one saying, Dear Rosemary and Thyme. Very few saying...
Pass me sage.
Simon and Mark. This one says, Dear Lennon and McCartney. Another one says, Dear Pinky and the Brain. Anyway, Rosemary and Thyme...
Which one of us is Lennon and which one is McCartney? I know the answer to that question.
Well, which one of us is Rosemary, first of all, and which one is Thyme?
I think you're more of a Rosemary, I'm more of a Thyme. I think I'm more of a Lennon and you're more of a McCartney.
A rare night in last night allowed me the opportunity to indulge in some quiet telly-watching. I choose to ignore the vague hisses of disapproval this will bring from the good doctor.
No, I'm...
What a surprise, then, when I found myself scanning the movie channels and watching the Roald Dahl adaptation of The Witches. Hmm. As a film that admittedly scared the pants off me as a small child, I was curious to see its effects now, noting Mr. Kermode's recent review of The Spiderwick Chronicles, describing it as a Hammer movie for kids. My conclusion was that, although the immediate pant-wetting quality of the film had worn thin, it was still a deliciously creepy experience. It got me thinking, what would the good doctor and his devoted Kermodian followers believe to be the scariest children's film ever made? The Witches is getting Lee's vote. Now, a number of people will say Chitty Chitty Bang Bang
because of the child catcher.
But that character aside, it's not a scary film. So we're talking about a kids' movie, so nothing stronger than PG,
okay,
but really scary.
Okay, before we do that, can I just say something? Two things on the subject of The Witches. One thing is that hotel, that's the Headland Hotel in Newquay, and it's funny, whenever if you go there, it is The Witches Hotel. The strangest thing about that film is there was a fuss about the ending. The original... Have you read the book, the Roald Dahl book?
I think I've read all the Roald Dahl books.
Okay, well, here's how the film originally ended. One of the things about it is the little boy gets turned into a mouse. Okay? You remember this? He gets turned into a mouse. And at the end of the film of The Witches, he gets turned out of being a mouse and he comes back to being a real boy. Mm-hmm. And that's a fudge ending, because the way the book ended and the way the film ended originally was this. The little boy was a mouse and the little boy is living with his grandmother. And the grandmother says, does it bother you that you're still a mouse? And the little boy says, well, I don't know, how long do mice live? And the grandmother says, oh, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. And he says, and how long will you live? And she says, oh, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. And he says, then I'm happy. Which is just a lovely, lovely ending. But everyone apparently in the previous said, no, you can't have that. You can't have talk of death and mice. You have to turn him back and give it a happy ending. And I know for a fact the director was very unhappy about having to fudge it, because they wanted it to end as Dahl did, because Dahl absolutely had that handle on, you know, the dark and the light, the scary and the uplifting.
Can you answer the question? Scariest kids movie ever? That's what I was trying to launch into.
Well, I think there are very scary moments in Dougal and the Blue Cat.
No,
there are.
Is that a kids film?
Dougal, Magic Roundabout, Certificate U. That would be yes.
No, it's not. There'll be no kids who've sat and watched Dougal and the Blue Cat and
thought that's an
entertaining movie. Normal people, a normal class, the kind of movie that you might put on 3 o'clock on your local multiplex and kids would enjoy going to see.
Well, so the scariest kids movie ever. You see, I mean, Singing Ringing Tree
briefly,
is not...
Briefly, it was just a kind of a casual, chatty introduction to the main feature.
I know, I'd have to think. I was quite scared by Return from Witch Mountain, but only because it was the title. I thought Witch Mountain sounded a bit creepy. And actually, funnily enough, some of the Planet of the Apes movies were very scary, although you could probably debate whether or not they were for kids. In fact, Beneath the Planet of the Apes was a AA certificate, so it wasn't for kids.
Maggie says, Jason and the Argonauts scared the pants off me when I was a little girl.
Yeah.
Labyrinth being suggested here. Watership Down. The Woman in White, or Lady, I can't remember, which scared the hell out of me.
Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, which I think... It's either Jason... It's Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, which has got the skeletons fighting in it, which is scary, and the BBFC had a problem with that. Two things I was going to say, which are important here, is one of them is Ramsay Campbell, famous British horror... or probably the most famous British horror author, said the scariest thing he'd ever seen was a frame in a Rupert the Bear annual of a tree walking on its roots, like, you know, its roots were like legs. And he said that was inspired all his horror fiction. And if you're working on the basis of PG and A certificate films... When I was 11, I saw Jaws, and anyone could see Jaws. And Jaws was clearly an X-rated movie posing as a family friend. I mean, that scared the living daylights out of me. And when I met Steven Spielberg, I, in no uncertain terms, told him exactly how scared I was by Jaws. And he just looked like, yeah, you and everyone else.
Box office top 10, at 10, The Eye.
Which is a remake of The Eye, which was better in its original version.
Should I go and see The Eye, or should I see The Eye?
I would get The Eye out on, the Pang Brothers original, out on DVD. I mean, always do.
21 at 9?
Yeah, it sounds like a betting, doesn't it? 17 to 1, 21 at 9. Kevin Spacey, gambling, Las Vegas, designed to make money, did make money, didn't do much else.
In Bruges at 8.
It has done pretty well, considering just how harsh and black its humour is. Colin Farrell's best performance in a long time. I keep saying this every week. You should see Martin McDonagh's short film, Six Shooter, but it is dark and scabrous, and that's a good thing.
Scabrous is a splendid word.
It is lovely, isn't it?
Maid of Honour at 7.
You've given me this Sony Award incentive, and they spelt my name wrong on it. It says Speech Board of the Cast of the Year, and they spelt it Simon Mayo.
Just thought you might want to see it.
Am I touching it?
One day.
It is. It's very nice, isn't it?
Maid of Honour at 7.
Yeah, rubbish. Terrible pun, terrible film, terrible gag. Ignore.
Now, Doomsday at 6. Yeah. Email from Kimberly in Preston. Glad to hear that the dog hasn't deserted you for the glitz and glamour of Cannes.
I'm going as soon as we finish speaking.
Well, he's about to desert you. Just wanted to convey my gratitude to the doc. I had already dismissed Doomsday as not my sort of film, but following last week's effusive review, I decided to take a trip to my local cinema to see what he was blathering on about, and it was one of the best films I've seen for a long time. I was even persuaded to purchase Dog Soldiers and Descent. Yeah. Thanks, Dr. Kermode.
Good. The Descent is absolutely terrific. I mean, it was funny because that review was prefaced by somebody writing in an email saying, I know Mark's going to slag this off, but, you know, he's just being snotty and pompous because actually it's a really good film. And it is a really good film.
And Kimberly concludes, Friday afternoons wouldn't be the same without Cosmo and Dibs. Again, which is which, I'm not entirely sure.
I'd be Dibs, wouldn't I?
5 is Nim's Island.
Which, you know, it's one of those films in which everything is in the trailer. I wanted it to be so good because I wanted to take my daughter to go and see it, and it's a letdown, it's a disappointment. Most of the problem with it is that Jodie Foster, bless her, is an incredibly talented actress, just doesn't do comedy. I mean, she's just not funny. I remember when people used to say that Meryl Streep wasn't funny, and then she did things like Death Becomes Her, and actually she is very funny, but Jodie Foster, it's like she's had her funny bone surgically removed, and she just does this strangely it's like she somehow believes that looking like you've drunk 50 cups of coffee is the height of hilarity, which if it were true would make me the funniest man on the planet.
Sam in Bournemouth, on the subject of our next movie, at number 4, Speed Racer.
This had better be good because I've had so much abuse about this.
Kudos to Dr. Kermode for his positive review of Speed Racer. I saw this on Monday afternoon with only one other person in the cinema and was blown away. The visuals and action are absolutely incredible, and they're backed up by an engaging story about family and loyalty. I can't believe some of the sniffy reviews I've seen in the press. I'm sure it's not an entirely perfect film, but the Wachowski brothers have created something visually unique with action and car chases of the like that have never been seen before, and at the very least deserve credit for that. So thanks to Mark for bucking the trend in his definitively commodian way.
I'm really
Sasha,
pleased.
Dear Doctor, after Mark's review last week, I chose to see Speed Racer over Iron Man. The decision aided by having the opportunity to see Speed Racer on a digital projector at the O2 in Greenwich.
Wow.
I now know what Mark meant by the film looking like a Teletubbies episode in HD. It was unbelievably bright and the colour pink is burnt into my eyeballs. However, it was shot really well and it's a good old-fashioned boys film which will appeal to all ages. More to the point, will cinema lose something with more films being shown on these projectors? Watching Speed Racer on a digital projector made it feel more like a glorified HD telly than being at the cinema with the imperfections of film. Interested in the good doctor's view on this?
Everything's going to HD. Steven Spielberg had kind of the last word on this. He said, my company will be at the forefront of digital projection, but I will be hanging on to celluloid until the day I die. So it's an interesting thing. There is definitely a rear guard action from people who grew up with film, who absolutely love it, but everyone, including those people, understand that celluloid will be gone in 10 years' time and everything will be digitally projected, not least because it solves the piracy issues of sending prints out.
This is Mark in Exeter. Found myself in the cinema on Wednesday watching Speed Racer, the most in-your-face film I've seen in a long time. I came out of the cinema feeling like my brain had been painted in Technicolor.
Yes!
By Willy Wonka.
Fantastic.
I think at one point during the film, my eyes almost exploded. There are only 3 primary colours, right? I think they might have found a couple more.
Yeah.
Then we skip a few paragraphs because lots of this. There is a possible environmental benefit from this film. It's PG rated. Maybe kids can be allowed to go overboard on Sunny Delight, be forced to sit quietly watching the film, and then be let loose to run wild. If we could then find a way to harness the energy released, we'd be a step closer to allowing our future generations the chance to club a seal or polar bear if they wanted. As if they'd still exist.
Can I tell you, I'm really thrilled that there's been that kind of response, because it is true that I was out on a limb. I didn't think I was that much out on a limb. I didn't realise how much everybody else hated it. I mean, I remember sitting in the screening and coming out and the other critics being sort of, you know, sniffily quiet, but that happens quite a lot. And I was just astonished by some of the one-star reviews that it got. I mean, Philip French, who I admire enormously, said that it was the worst piece of computer-generated idiocy he'd ever seen. And no, it isn't. It's really good.
How can you be quietly sniffy, by the way?
Because it's not, you know, I mean, being loudly sniffy is going...
Yeah, I've got that. And quietly sniffy? Barely audible.
Yeah, there we go.
Forgetting Sarah Marshall is at three.
Which is James King on the poster, you know, painfully funny. Not painfully funny, not outrageously funny, moderately diverting in certain parts.
That's
largely
not going to get on the poster.
No, but it should do. It should say, forgetting Sarah Marshall, from those people who brought you those other movies, which were going downhill a little bit, and featuring Russell Brand, who's not bad.
Moderately diverting.
That's like, you remember the House Martins? There used to be a badge for the House Martins which said the House Martins are quite good, and another one which said the House Martins, fourth best band in Hull.
Yes, now that's what I call quite good.
And that's what I call quite good. That's
what happens in Vegas at two?
Should stay in Vegas.
And the UK's
this
number...
This joke, incidentally, copyright every newspaper. Yeah. I didn't make it up.
UK's number one is Iron Man. Martin P. Jackson, Cramlington, Northumberland. He should be a folk singer.
He should.
Simon, is there a reason why The Good Doctor has failed to mention that one of his favourite British actors, Paul Bettany, who, by the way, would make a very good job of playing our friend Philippe Sands, who was in earlier. That could be a Paul Bettany role in the future.
So he's blonde.
Hair dye. Paul Bettany has a role in Iron Man. Bettany plays the voice of Jarvis, Tony Stark's computerised manservant in the film. Incidentally, I was delighted by my initial email about Iron Man provoking a Commodian rant on last week's show. I consider it a considerable badge of honour.
I hadn't mentioned it because I hadn't noticed. But thank you for pointing it out. I am a big Paul Bettany fan. I hadn't noticed in amidst everything else. May I once again say that there is this thing on YouTube when somebody's cut my impressions of Robert Downey and Jeff Bridges to clips of the movie, and it is, I think it's the funniest 3 minutes I've seen in a very long time. Not it's, me the funny, it's the editing.
Lots of people saying it's Jason and the Argonauts with the skeletons, not Sinbad.
Is that right? So Jason and the Argonauts with the skeletons in that case. Seventh Voyage of Sinbad's got something really
that
scary.
That would
be
a scary kids.
Anyway. Because I mean, the all the Harryhausen stuff was a monster movie. It was, you know, it's moving plasticine, which obviously isn't that scary nowadays, but it was monster movie stuff. He was a monster movie creator. Godzilla, incidentally, is a PG-rated film now, and I think that's still pretty scary.
I agree with Simon Toseland in Bristol. Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs was pretty scary. I remember being freaked out by that. Ran out of the cinema when The Wicked Witch appeared.
And everybody gets very, very upset by Bambi. And here's the interesting thing about Bambi. Do you remember the scene in which you see Bambi's mother get shot?
No, because you don't see that.
Exactly, you don't. And yet it's one of the great things that people imagine that they've seen Bambi's mother being shot. You don't see her get shot.
It would be remiss of us, though... not that surprising, if we got to the 3:30 news bulletin without a review.
We've got a minute. We can't do anything in a minute.
Is there something of no consequence that you can just toss casually away?
No, I could start doing Smart People, but then I tell you what, why don't I set up Charlie Bartlett and then we'll stop and then hang on, okay? So I'll do the beginning.
Well, so you'll tell us what it's about without telling
us
whether you like it.
Exactly. Okay. So Charlie Bartlett, which according to the poster, picks up where Juno left off, which you'd think means features a baby growing up, because I think that's where Juno left off. But there we are. But in fact, it isn't any. So the story is, there's this kid, he's in a posh school, he's making fake driving licenses, he gets fired from the posh school, well, not fired, expelled from the posh school, so he gets sent to a public school. Now, of course, in America, a public school means state school. Here, public school means the opposite.
Same as a private school.
Same as a private school. So he gets sent to a public as opposed to a private school.
State school.
Where state school, but they don't say that in America because it sounds too Russian. They think that sounds like an indoctrination room 101 thing.
Is that right?
Well, why else would they not call it a state school? Because they don't like the word state. Well, they are the United States, but a state school sounds like an...
It sounds as though there are big holes in your argument.
Okay. Anyway, so that's the setup. And then he starts dealing medication and psychiatric advice to all the pupils.
Charlie Bartlett is the movie that we're discussing. That's what it's about, whether it's any good. And I suspect most people who've been listening for more than about a week...
have lost the will to live.
No, exactly what you think about it because of the way in which you've set it up. Mark Nerdin in Winchester said the scariest kids movie being the topic. Simon and Dr. K, my vote for scary kids film is Pinocchio, Disney's Pinocchio.
Oh, right.
The scene where the boy turns into a donkey was a very, very unsettling experience. Dear Windsor Davis and Donna Stell, censors in Britain give Jaws an A certificate because they said adults would find it more frightening than children.
I don't understand why. I mean, I was 11 and it really, really scared the life out of me, and I didn't go into the sea for the next couple of summers.
Neil in Wiltshire, amazingly, when I was at secondary school during the 80s, they showed The Evil Dead.
What?
That's a kind of liberal school, don't you think?
I remember our school film society showed Psycho, the original Psycho, and Barry, who I was in a class with, who was really tough, and I was in a band with him for a while, had a moment in the film and had to be shown to the door.
Anyway, Neil in Wiltshire continues. He remembers a girl vomiting during the film, and it stayed with him, as it would. And Dave in Bath, Simon and Dog, I was truly, truly terrified by Dougal and the Blue Cat. We only had the soundtrack on LP. Those sounds still haunt me now.
And can I tell you, the best thing happened the other day. I got a phone call from Fenella Fielding, right?
Yeah.
The voice of the Blue Cat.
Yeah.
But not the voice. Yeah, the blue voice.
Yeah.
Blue is beautiful.
And still that's rubbish.
It's not. It's great. She was really lovely. She sent me a film, which I am going to have a look at. And I spoke to the blue voice on the telephone.
Charlie Bartlett, you explain what it was about.
Okay, here's a clip in which he has to explain to his principal, they call it, headmaster, we call it here, played by mumbling Bob Downey Jr.
If you can explain what you're doing, or better yet, why you're doing it, that'd be a good start.
Look, I'm helping these kids, okay? Nobody else is listening to them.
Well, I encourage you to listen all you like, but let's face it, you're not a professional.
No.
And these medications have a legitimate use. They've helped a lot of people. No. It's a generational thing, you know? Teenagers always find a way to abuse something. And why not, right? Being zonked out of your mind is a lot more fun than dealing with your problems.
Excuse me for asking, but are you speaking from experience? Or?
You know, that's not an appropriate question.
You know, that's okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I sought treatment for some issues.
You're not doing that anymore?
Got to the point where I felt I was ready to stop, so I did.
How's that going for you?
Some days are better than others.
Do you want to talk about it sometime?
No, I would not like to talk about it sometime.
I could understand every word he was saying.
Yeah, you could, fine. So it's clear, look, the film wants to be Ferris Bueller's Day Off, but a bit darker. But the thing was, Ferris Bueller was really enchanting and funny and genuinely life-affirming, and this guy isn't, and the film isn't. It also kind of wants to be Rushmore, but Rushmore was dark and edgy and satirical and genuinely, you know, new, and this isn't, and it won't ever be any of those things. And it kind of wants to be Pump Up the Volume, because it's sort of about somebody, you know, the outsider getting all the kids behind
them. Was that Christian Slater?
Yeah, it was.
That
he was
a good film.
Really good in that film. And that's one of the best portrayals of a radio DJ in the cinema.
That's what I remember it,
exactly.
I suspect.
Can you remember what he was called? Okay, I don't know whether you can say it out loud.
Well, no,
case. It's one of those things. It might be taken the wrong way. Anyway, so it wants to be all of those films, and it isn't any of them. And the poster says it's like Juno, and it isn't like Juno. And there's a whole running gag all the way through it about Ritalin, about is he ADHD, and is he going to take Ritalin, and then him supplying Ritalin to all the rest of it. And it's the funny, actually, that's a sort of a touchstone for the movie itself. It's like a movie with ADHD. It just flits around. It can't quite concentrate exactly what it wants to be, and it wants to be a whole bunch of other stuff. And it's very gabbly. I should speak. And you just go, yeah, this is reminding me of a bunch of other films. I mean, it's not terrible. It's just not much good. And it just reminded me of these other films that were a lot better. And the poster kind of misrepresents the level of hilarity that's in them. But then that's what they're trying to do. So very, very average. C-, must try harder.
Emma in Cambridge, most terrifying children's movie ever, Dumbo. As if the emotional distress of mother and son twining trunks through jail bars wasn't bad enough, those hallucinogenic drunk elephants scared the living daylights out of me.
Oh, right.
I was so scarred as a child, my mum had to hide the video.
Oh, that's very interesting. You're quite right. I had forgotten the drunken scene in that. That is scary. There is also a scary sequence in Fantasia in which, you know, the demonic figure appears, and that very much like Snow White.
And you mentioned Seventh Voyage of Skinbad.
Skinbad.
And another one.
Did he like listening to ska music?
Rick in Mevagissi. There is actually a big sword-wielding skeleton in the Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, but Jason in the Argonauts is the one where they all spring up out of the ground
never sword fight
after the bad guy plants the teeth of the Hydra.
And thank you for doing that, because that explains me why I got the two things messed up in my mind.
What else is new?
So, Shutter. Remember what we were saying?
By the way, the lights are on, so you can watch the fun, if you would go online, so you can actually...
If you want to watch the fun of a fat guy in a black suit waving his arms around...
Are you going to wear that in Cannes?
What else can I wear?
Well, you could wear a T-shirt and flip-flops or something like that.
I might occasionally wear a T-shirt and flip-flops if the moment... But generally, I like to be seen in a fully, you know... I like to be in mourning the whole time.
So you'll be live in Cannes next week?
I will be live in Cannes. And also, because I've got... There's this website now, this bbc.co.uk/MarkKermode, in which every day I'm going to be filing live video blogs from Cannes. The deal being that over the course of the week, it's like watching somebody disintegrate. You know, if you put some sludge in a jar and you leave it, and over the course of a week, it develops mold and fungus and sort of turns back into, you know, pond life. That's generally what happens to me in Cannes. So log on and enjoy the sight of somebody coming apart.
That'll be most entertaining, I suspect. And then you'll get to see...
Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, apparently it's not... Well, apparently the word is people a bit disappointed. That's why they haven't launched a very big party.
Yeah, but the thing is... look, of course people are going to be... When I interviewed Steven Spielberg, he said to me...
Do you want to mention that again, by the way? Because you've only mentioned that about six times since 3 o'clock.
No, he was on the phone to me the other day. He said, Mark, I'm really worried about the film. And I said, it's okay, Steven, don't worry. Everyone will forgive you for it. No, look, who knows? I mean, there's no point in prejudging things. As we know, everyone was very disappointed by Speed Racer. Even the people that distribute Speed Racer said, yeah, well, hey, it's stiffed. What do we want? Well, no, they're all wrong. It might be great. Who knows? I'll tell you when I've seen it.
All right, that's next week. In the meantime...
Shutter. Remember we were talking before about The Eye being a remake of the Pang Brothers
movie? Another remake of an Asian horror.
It is. So, you know, these two guys, Doug Davison and Roy Lee, who set up this company called Vertigo Entertainment, and basically what they did was they took Asian territory movies and sold them to the Hollywood studios and did the negotiations between them. So they basically are the people behind the remake of The Eye, the remake of The Grudge and The Grudge 2 and forthcoming Grudge 3 and the remake of Ring and Ring 2 and the remake of Dark Water and the remake of Lake House. And in fact, even the Oscar-winning The Departed, which is a remake of Infernal Affairs, and Lee and Davison are the people behind all that. So, I mean, you know, from business acumen, it's absolutely extraordinary. The problem is, it now means that every single piece of slightly edgy Asian mainstream filmmaking has been remade in America, and it's been a very, very declining curve. So the story this time is, there's a man and a woman on sort of working honeymoon in Japan, so it's a little bit lost in translation, and whilst they're going down a dark road, they run somebody down. They run down a mysterious lank-haired woman moving in a mysterious way, but as soon as they get out of the car, she's not there anymore.
Is it Helena Bonham Carter?
No.
Normally when lank hair.
No, not in Japan.
Why not?
Because the lank-haired woman in the Japanese horror movies doesn't look anything like Helena Bonham Carter. It always looks exactly the same. Okay. It looks like a mannequin with lank hair moving a bit weirdly. Of course, when they first did that with the Ring movie, the way that they made her move weirdly was that they made her walk backwards and then showed it the other way around, like the little guy in Twin Peaks in the Red Room. Very interesting. Clearly you're bored, so moving on. They get out of the car, they can't find her, they then look at their wedding photographs, and guess what's on their wedding photographs? Strange spectral apparitions. What could they possibly be? Listen and learn.
Can I see your pictures?
Sure, they're just tourist shots.
Oh, God. Is she new to see?
What?
Spirit photos. Hold on, you know what these are?
Yeah, my ex-boyfriend works at a spirit photography magazine.
They're all magazines?
Yeah.
Any in English?
I can introduce you tomorrow, after the photo shoot. Come on, it'll be fun.
That's cute, you girls have a date.
Well, I guess so.
Can I just say that in the screening that I saw, the line, my ex-boyfriend works at a spirit photography magazine, got the biggest laugh of the day.
Because
it's a funny line.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, you know, do you not think that's funny? You're really hard work today. Have I annoyed you in some way?
Now that you pointed it out, it's very funny.
There's a brilliant thing.
Can we hear that again?
Somebody wrote something in The Guardian about us. Did you see this? It was one of those My Media. They said that they really liked to listen to the movie. But they said, but that stuff about hello to Jason Isaacs and David Morrissey is getting a bit silly. Getting a bit silly? What? You mean it started this great big pinnacle of intellectual achievement and then it slowly declined into getting a bit silly? Anyway, okay.
It's very important because Jason waits for it. It's the kind of best bit of social interaction he has in the week.
I know. And David, obviously.
He's probably down in Docklands at the moment waiting to pretend it's Baghdad again before he goes out and kills some people. And so he's just waiting for us to say hello to him.
To very quickly cover in the deal with Shutter, here's the thing. I mean, it's no better or worse than The Eye. It is just in this, as I said, this gradual decline. It's all the elements are there. Lankhead woman moving in a mysterious way, there, fine. Yeah, guilty ghostly secret, yeah, that's there. Tracking shots with understated bit at the end in which you see somebody's face and eyes, yeah, that's there. Not too much blood, but... And it's the same... And there's a bit in it. There's a piggybacking scene, a ghostly piggybacking scene in it, which I've seen in at least one other movie that wasn't the original version of Shutter. And somebody write in and remind me of this. I think it's Takashi Shimizu's Grudge 3, the Japanese one, the English language remake, which is forthcoming. I think that's what it is. Somebody let me know, is the ghostly piggybacking scene in that? Because it's literally like, all you do is you get all the elements, you get a box of elements, you throw them down, you go, there we go, and let's do it in English, and that's the latest remake. And it's a real shame because Takashi Shimizu has now made something like 8 Grudge movies, if you count all the different versions. I mean, even somebody like Hideo Nakata, who's a brilliant director, who really should be doing really innovative, interesting stuff, like, you know, like a new Nick Rogue, is currently working on a remake of The Entity, and he's working on a, you know, another translation of the Ringu movies with Ring 3. There's so much talent in that area of cinema, in you know, Japan and Thailand, and there's just no reason. This is a, obviously Shutter is a tyrant. There's just no reason to keep recycling this stuff.
Burnley Ben says, as a child, my big brother let me watch 18 certificate films like Nightmare on Elm Street, but nothing scared. That's very, very bad.
That really is.
But nothing scared me as much as Labyrinth.
Really?
Larry in Southend, The Wizard of Oz, scary for kids. How many people didn't get scared at the coloured parts, especially the monkeys?
Yeah.
Helen says, let my daughter watch Wizard of Oz with trepidation. She was scared by Dora the Explorer, but she loved it and thought the monkeys were bats.
Yes, good for her.
Dick, Clinton and Obama, The Empire Strikes Back has a dark feel throughout, and the revelation at the end, along with the carbon freezing of Han Solo, was really scary for a 7-year-old. That's from Paul. Dave in Liverpool, as a kid, I was terrified watching Hawk the Player by Jack Palance as Voltar. Got it recently on DVD.
I was really scared by the episode of Star Trek, The Menagerie. Remember that? The very early, which cut the early footage of that guy who was Kirk before Kirk was. And it's the guys who talk with their heads squishing in and out.
And Mark on this, I can't speak personally, but I showed my 5-year-old daughter E.T., a few months ago.
And she wept so much she had to be transfused with water, which is what generally happens.
She was absolutely traumatised.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
She is now terrified that this scary alien is hiding in her cupboard.
Oh, right.
Brilliant film, but parents beware.
I don't know about it being scary, but I know, certainly, I'm showing it to my kids, and it was like, literally, we had to take them to counselling afterwards. I mean, not literally. When I say literally, I mean not literally. I mean the opposite of literally.
That could confuse,
like, public schools and
person,
private. But it was like the level of emotional distress when E.T. says, I'll be right here. Do you know who did E.T.'s voice? Here's the clue. Officer and a Gentleman.
Richard Gere.
No, the other one.
The guy who was the sergeant.
No! Deborah Winger.
Was it Deborah Winger?
Yeah. I mean, I just think if Richard Gere had picked up E.T. at the end and walked off into the thing, it would have been a different ending.
Email from Nigel in Edinburgh. Dear Simon and Dr. Sandals, I think I might be a week early for the review of Indiana Jones and the Zimmer Frame of Destiny, but I've been very excited by it thanks to the BBC's reruns of the first two films.
Yeah, exactly.
First one was great, just as exciting as I remembered it. As a nipper, and Karen Allen was lovely. I'd forgotten how dreadful the second one was. Hammy, overblown, illogical, borderline racist.
Yes,
I was somewhat
chilled monkey brains
to see that this too was a Spielberg film, and also felt George Lucas's flabby influence. We all know that George is rubbish now, but has Spielberg ever done anything worse? Oh yes, Watership Down gets very scary at the end with a mortally wounded General Bloodwort, or whatever he was called, leaping out at you at the screen.
It does.
So we'll get some of that next week. What else is new this week?
I want to rattle through 3 movies. If you want to see an inventive sort of low budget horror movie this week, Outpost, which is this British movie, group of mercenaries get sent to Eastern Europe, which in horror movies is always really, really bad. They're going to, maybe they're looking for gold, maybe they're looking for guns, maybe they're looking for money, who knows. They get to a bunker which was deserted by the Nazis, and when they get there, it turns out that there is a machine developed by Hitler for really, really bad and vaguely supernatural purposes. Here is an explanatory Basil exposition moment.
They were running some kind of trials on these soldiers, exposing them to the energy harnessed in that chamber above.
Why?
Honestly, I think they were trying to enhance the men.
Enhance them?
Theoretically, the human body could become fused, disappear, interwoven with the magnetic fields themselves. The Americans tried something similar in 43. An attempt was made to render a warship, the USS Eldridge, invisible, using Einstein's theories. The Philadelphia experiment. Urban myth has it they were partially successful. I think the Nazis were attempting something similar. Maybe even more ambitious. A soldier that was invulnerable.
Is that the whole movie?
No. That's just the explanation. Fine. But here's the thing, right? You think, right, so it's supernatural zombie-style Nazis, which obviously makes you think of Zombie Lake.
Zombie Lake. I've never seen it.
Classic video. Really?
I've never seen
Zombie Lake.
What happens in Zombie Lake? Do zombies come out of a lake?
They do. And then they're Nazi zombies as well. It's SS.
Then what happens?
Well, they eat because they're zombies, right?
Yeah, but then what?
Or you might... Well, then there's a lot of, you know, bloodshed and killing. Then there's an obscene publication.
Is there a happy ending?
No. In fact, there isn't.
Do they go back to the lake?
Some of them go...
Did the lake... was it the lake that made them zombies?
No, the Nazis had made them zombies.
And then put them in the lake? Why would you do that?
Shall I lend you the video?
Yes.
Because the point about it was one of the video Nazis. It was only a passing comment, right? There's other sort of
is
military movies, like, for example, no, it's not a PG. It was banned under the Video Recordings Act, and then it came back again. Now you can get it. Now nobody cares. It's all perfectly fine. Not banned under the Video Recordings Act, banned under the 1959 Obscene
Where
Publications
are we now?
Act. Fine. So anyway, so you think about military-themed horror movies. You think maybe of something like Death Watch, or you think of Michael Mann's The Keep. And in the case of this, there's something strangely nostalgic about it. It is, in some respects, like watching an old 80s-style video nasty. I mean, it's actually not that gory. It's an 18-rated film, although the BBFC are very clear to point out that it has strong bloody violence, but it's the very strong language. It's the combination of the strong bloody violence and the very strong language that's really pushing it over into 18.
Does the language and the violence go together?
Well, at one moment it does. They are very... They say this thing... For the most part, it's only the impression of violence, but much of this might have been acceptable at 15. Two sequences, greater dwelling and focus on very personal violence, accompanied by strong gory details.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed
it. Yeah, that in Zombie Lake.
Yeah, well, Zombie Lake is you know, funnily enough, Zombie Lake actually isn't that much more gory. It's the thing with it happened with an awful lot of video Nazis, and you'd know if you'd seen more of them. They were not the films that were described, certainly not the films that were described in court, and certainly not the films that were often described on the sleeve art, which made things seem a lot worse than they were. Now, there's two other movies I want to get through very quickly. Smart People, which has got Ellen Page in it, which is the one for which you expect
from Juno.
From Juno, which is, you know, picks up where Juno left off, although it doesn't. The story is... Have we got time to do a clip from it, or shall I
run
through?
Yeah, go on.
Okay, fine. So Dennis Quaid is a professor. He's misanthropic, and he can't remember anybody, and he gets hit on the head, and he ends up in a hospital where he's treated by Sarah Jessica Parker, who is one of his old students, who he can't remember because he never remembers any of his students. And Ellen Page has got to look after him. We haven't got time for a clip, so I'll just... Because I want to do Caramel as well. Ellen Page has got to look after him, but his brother, played by... I never get this right. Thomas Hayden Church. I always want to call him Thomas Hayden Christensen, because that's the name of the guy who can't act, who played Darth Vader when he gets the bucket on his head in the Star Wars movies.
Him.
And the thing with Smart People is, if you've seen Squid and the Whale, right, which I know you haven't, but if you have, it's one of
Are
those
they in the Zombie Lake?
No, it's one of those sort of American smart movies about smart people being really, really annoying. And I found
like
Squid
Sideways.
And the Whale. Yes, well, actually, funny enough, this is from the producer of Sideways,
right.
Which is like saying from somebody whose mate once saw 2001, or from the people that brought you something, although they didn't quite do it. And the thing with smart people is two things. First, Ellen Page is a great actress, and I could watch her in absolutely anything, although in this she is clearly coasting. Dennis Quaid is doing this misanthropic, really, really annoying, smart, clever teacher who's written a book called You Can't Read. And in The Squid and the Whale, there's a similar set of people. But in The Squid and the Whale, you believe in the people, and consequently, I don't like the film because I find the people really annoying. In this, the fact that I don't find them quite as annoying is actually an indication of the fact that I don't believe in them as much as I did in The Squid and the Whale. So although this is a less annoying film than The Squid and the Whale, The Squid and the Whale is clearly a better film, and this is like a kind of strange, odd, toned down echo of it. So not great, very, very dispensable, but worth seeing perhaps for Ellen Page, and a really, really annoying indie pindy noodly poodly acoustic guitar soundtrack. Whenever when anything kind of melancholic happens, you hear, you know, the hand moving up the string. Yeah, mind of it. But film of the week, which I'm going to have to do very quickly, is this
film of the week, and you
French
had a minute
Lebanon co-production called Caramel, right? But you look at the poster and you think, oh, chocolat, right? And it's going to be all sweet, and it's a story about it's a group of women's stories kind of brought together around a hairdressing salon, a beautifying salon. And Caramel, which you see at the beginning, you think, oh, sticky sweet confection, but in fact the caramel of the title is used for the purpose of removing hair, which is a very good sort of paradigm for the film itself, that it's sweet centred, but there is a bittersweet element of pain involved in it. One of the women is having an affair with a married man. She becomes obsessed with the married man's real life wife. Another one is an ageing woman who's desperately trying to get to look younger, to get acting roles. Somebody else is this woman whose kind of entire erotic outlet seems to be in the process of massaging somebody else's hair. And there's an absolutely lovely little story about a seamstress, an older seamstress, who's mad as bats' sister is preventing her from finding love. All all these stories all intertwine, all intermingle, and as I said, there is this overriding caramel motif. And what's really interesting about it is it's dedicated to my Beirut. And you'd think that a film with that setting would be all about politics and religion and difficulty, but it isn't. I mean, those things are going on in the background, but the film itself is about human relations. Thank you very much.
Mark's funniest comment ever, says Jay Metcalf. I was just thinking that if Richard Gere had picked up E.T. at the end, it would have been an entirely different film. Knowing the significance of that scene in An Officer and a Gentleman, I could not help but be in fits. Movie of the week?
Caramel.
Enjoy can. You know you want to.
Can don't.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.